Jewish World Plague by Hermann Esser, the treacherous murder of the young German diplomat Ernst vom Rath in the office of the German embassy in Paris on November 7, 1938, by a 17-year-old Jew named Herschel Grunspan, is rightly viewed by the entire German people as a contemptible, sneaky attack on Adolf Hitler's new Greater Germany. 80 million people were touched in the depth of their being. Justified outrage erupted. According to their own figures, the Jews, who had been living very well among the German people for centuries, were worth a total of 8 billion marks. When the Reich government required them to pay a penalty of 1 billion marks, the Jewish Democratic World Press howled as if Jews in National Socialist Germany were starving and going to the dogs. Each German reads with fury what foreign journalists, paid by and working for Jewish money, write about Germany's domestic affairs. Still, one is surprised that even today one occasionally finds citizens who feel sorry about the money the Jews had to pay, and who in their pubs or family conversations speak about the poor Jews. These attitudes prove that despite constant National Socialist education about the Jewish World Plague, there remains much to be done, particularly among the intellectuals. The knowledge of the Jew must be brought to every attic and every corner of Greater Germany. The knowledge that the Jew was a world plague from the beginning remained so for millennia and will forever remain one. Each Jew individually and Jewry as a whole is without a home. Jewry undermines every people and every state that it infiltrates. It feeds as a parasite and a culture-killing worm in the host people. It grows and grows like weeds in the state, the community, and the family, and infests the blood of humanity everywhere. In brief, that is the pestilential nature of Jewry, against which every people, every state, every nation must, should, and wants to defend itself if it does not want to be the victim of this bloody plague. Wherever Jewry has appeared, it has never built anything. It has always and everywhere destroyed or torn down, sucking others dry to fill itself. From the days of the Romans to our day, Jewry in every century, in every people, was and remained a foreign body, a destroyer of real and ideal values, a denier of any upward progress, a plague for body and soul. It sneaks in through deceit and treachery, trickery and slyness, murder and assault, understanding how to establish itself. Throughout history, the poets and philosophers, the leaders of industry and science, the leading lights of art and culture, statesmen and economists whose blood was not infected by the Jews, have warned against the Jew in every century. They proclaimed openly and clearly what he is: the plague. From Tacitus to Schopenhauer, from Giordano Bruno to Mommsen and Treitschke, the intellectual heroes of every age have called the Jew the demo of decay, the ferment of decomposition, as the misfortune of the peoples or of humanity, the epitome of sensuality, of greed, of dishonesty, of selfishness, of heartlessness, and the lust for power. Over the centuries, Jewry has infiltrated every nation and every people, committing crime after crime. Today it is on top, tomorrow at the bottom, without honor or a sense of honor. It has but one thing: a greedy lust for possession and power, for fame, for suppressing and enslaving the surrounding world. The cultured peoples, both today and in the past, create and build, proving their worth as the creators and advancers of culture. Jewry was and remains only the corrupter and destroyer of culture. Everything healthy and great is rooted only in the nation. The foundation of a state and the fundamentals of a culture can only be national. Jewry can never be great, can never create culture, for it is not a people, but rather only a corrupt mixture of inferior desert tribes with no national life or longing, with no proud and famous past. Jewry has always lived from day to day, not from labor but amassing earthy treasures as its first goal. Even Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob received this revelation upon leaving Egypt: "I shall lead you to the land of your fathers and give you large and beautiful cities that you did not build, and houses full of things that you did not gather, and fallen trees that you did not cut, vineyards and olive groves that you did not plant, and you will eat and be satisfied." Just as the Jews conquered their promised land, so it has been with the Jews over the years down to this very day. They come as foreigners, as beggars, slinking and groveling, with false humility and dishonest respect. Once they have swindled their way to something, they become thieves and bloodsuckers, either openly or in secret. They turn into thieving and murderous Bolshevist hordes for their host peoples. That happens everywhere. Jewry has shown itself to be the thief of the material possessions of the host peoples, as a destroyer of culture and as a parasite everywhere and in every way from the dim past through the present day. The double face of Judah grins through the millennia. The Jew bewitches and exploits the gullible, the ignorant, the trusting. He reserves for himself all the advantages of mammon and capitalism, wealth and treasures, all the joys and pleasures of life. Yet for 3,000 years the Jew has complained about oppression and persecution, about hatred and prejudice against him, but the Jewry has gathered and swindled the world's money. The Jews are so oppressed and enslaved that around 17 million of them have gathered about 200 billion marks. One can hardly speak and write about poor Jews. The history of every age and nation proves, page by page and chapter by chapter, that Jewry always and everywhere has been a homeless racial mishmash, a world plague. It has remained a world plague to this day, and will remain a world plague for all eternity. That is its chosenness from all the peoples of the earth, a chosenness of destructive pestilence for the world and for mankind.